Welcome back to Just a Bite. I'm sure you all have been following the news coming from Congress over the past few months. The Farm Bill has expired, and we do not know when Congress will pick that back up. However, there are plenty of things that have impacted Ohioans with low incomes, including the debt ceiling deal, the unwind of the public health emergency, and the looming threat of a government shutdown. This week, we sit down as a team to talk about all of those things, along with the possible impact of the Farm Bill being delayed. During this episode, you'll hear a new host interviewing the team. Audrey Van Zant joined our team about a month ago as our Director of Communications after working at Second Harvest Food Bank of Champaign, Clark, and Logan counties for 3 years. Audrey will be helping us out with the podcast, both behind the scenes and at the mic, among many other things. Welcome, Audrey.
Hi, Sarah and Hope. I'm so excited to be here with the both of you today, and I want to thank you both for inviting me to host today's episode. For our listeners, my name is Audrey Van Zant, and I'm the Director of Communications here at the Ohio Association of Food Banks. And I've been with the team for a little over a month now, so it's still fairly new to me. But I just want to take the time to thank you both for everything thus far.
Absolutely. And Audrey, I think you can give us a little bit more than that about, you know, who you are, where you come from, how you relate to all of this. Audrey, just give us a little bit more.
Yeah, thanks, Hope. So I am a food banker by heart. I've spent the last 3 years at Second Harvest Food Bank of Champaign, Clark, and Logan counties located
in... Is that by Dayton?
It is by Dayton, but there's, as you know, there is a difference between the Springfield and Dayton region. Springfield is close to Dayton, and I was there for 3 years working as their development manager. I came on doing fundraising, and then that kind of evolved into marketing and advocacy. And through my close work with advocacy and really the two of you and Jory here at OAF, I kind of built these relationships, and OAF was hiring, and I was looking to kind of zoom out a little. I'm Springfield born and raised, and I love my hometown, but I was looking for something bigger and new, and food banking and food security is incredibly important to me, so happy to be here.
Thanks, Audrey from Dayton.
Well, for today's episode, we'll be discussing all things related to Congress and the disarray we are unfortunately seeing right now. There's a lot of chaos and a potential government shutdown looming on November 17th, an expired farm bill, and a host of changes that could impact programs like AmeriCorps, SNAP, TANF, WIC. I could go on. It's really a lot to unpack, but we're here to break it down for you. So let me start with Sarah. Sarah, this has been the year of unprecedented policy changes, especially with the public health emergency ending. Programs impacted by PHE have had a phased approach when it comes to the rollback of COVID flexibilities. Medicaid has been directed to make redeterminations on eligibility over the course of 2023, expanded SNAP eligibility for college students, and slowly rolled back as college students received their SNAP cases and SNAP emergency allotments. Those extra COVID SNAP benefits had expired in March. Our listeners may remember that we talked about this with the state of Ohio on SNAP in a previous episode. So, Sarah, now that we're closer to the end of 2023, what has been the impact of the PHE unwind on the folks that we serve?
Yeah, thanks for that context, Audrey. We have been deeply worried about the PHE unwind really since the PHE began, because we knew that the end of the public health emergency would be very complex and complicated, with the threat of many folks getting kicked off programs because of administrative error, folks not receiving the notices, you know, lack of staff at the counties. We talk about that all the time. And just overall confusion about the ending of these COVID flexibilities. So I want to talk a little bit about Medicaid and then a little bit about really the heartbreaking food insecurity numbers that we just heard about recently. So when it comes to Medicaid, states have to review the cases of folks on Medicaid to make sure that they're still eligible, because the federal government directed states to pause their redetermination process during the, of course, the largest public health crisis in all of our lifetimes. So those redeterminations were paused and then resumed in April of 2023, and will really continue throughout the year as states review batches of cases each month. However, all of this requires action on behalf of the person on Medicaid. So that means that folks who are no longer eligible will be removed from the rolls, but also folks who just didn't receive the notice that they had to do something or didn't get the call from the county to proceed with the redetermination process. So many folks will be at risk of losing their Medicaid coverage over the coming months because of any of these reasons. Estimates suggest that between 15 million and 18 million people are at risk nationwide, with approximately 7 million people who are at risk because of administrative reasons, not because of eligibility. And then to my point about food insecurity numbers, we got really heartbreaking food insecurity numbers a few weeks ago. Folks had a hard time feeding themselves in 2022. So the report found that 44.2 million people had difficulty getting enough food to feed everyone in their household in 2022, up from 33.8 million people in the year prior. And of course, like many other things, that's not impacting communities in the same way. So, you know, Black, Latino, and other individuals of color are seeing increases in food insecurity more than the general population. So, Black individuals saw a 15% increase in food insecurity and were nearly 2.4 times more likely to face hunger than white individuals. And Latino individuals saw a 29% increase in food insecurity and were 2.2 times more likely to face hunger. So we're seeing, you know, disparities play out in those numbers. And it's really confirmation that, you know, what we've been talking about all along is what we've been saying it is, which is heartbreaking. Of course, we'd rather not see high numbers like that, but that's really all due to the rollback of those COVID flexibilities and things like the child tax credit and stuff like that. So sorry to be bleak, but
no worries. Unfortunately, I think this episode is going to be a little bleak. Hopefully, we'll turn that around at the end. But thanks for putting that into context for us. You know, as we had mentioned, that listeners may remember we talked about this in a previous episode, and we'll continue to keep an eye and update on it. So thanks, Sarah, for a quick update on that. I'd like to go over to Hope. Hope, this has been a year of unprecedented policy fights. Some of the listeners may also remember that Congress made a deal to raise the debt ceiling in late May, early June. Can you talk to us a little bit about why was this deal made, and what does that deal mean for Ohioans with low incomes who are eligible and qualify for SNAP benefits?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Audrey. So typically, though there is nothing typical about this Congress and the state of American politics right now, but typically any major changes to ag policy, agriculture policy, that is, which includes SNAP benefits and other benefits from the nutrition title, would only be made in the farm bill, which, as we will talk a little bit later today, has since expired. But we're talking right now about May and June. As you said, that Congress needed to make a decision on raising the limit on federal borrowing. And so right now, our Congress is split, with the House again being controlled by the Republican majority, and our U.S. Senate is controlled by a Democratic majority. So the deal, so when we say debt ceiling, sealing deal. We're talking about, you know, the deal between the two chambers and, of course, the White House. You know, when making a deal, they had to do what everybody does when they need to reevaluate their purse strings, is they figure out places where they could cut. And unfortunately, this time, the cuts came from the SNAP program. So in the debt ceiling deal that was passed earlier this year, Congress decided to raise the age on able-bodied adults without dependents. Previously, those subject to the able-bodied adult without dependents SNAP time limit were between the ages of 18 and 49. But this debt ceiling deal brought older adults onto that program. And so right now, they have a step-up approach as to when the age will be raised. But for now, it's 18 to 53. So what that means for Ohioans, and Food Insecure Ohioans trying to access the SNAP program, is that if you are between the ages of 18 and 53 without meeting a few exceptions, and those include, you know, being disabled and caring for a young child, for example, but if you are in that age range and you're trying to seek SNAP benefits, then you are mandated to work or participate in some sort of work or training. Otherwise, you would not be eligible for the benefit. So this is very crucial in Ohio, because Ohio is a mandatory employment and training state. I think we will get into that in another episode with our favorite consultant, Rachel Cahill. But Ohio is a mandatory employment and training state, meaning that Ohioans accessing SNAP benefits don't have the leeway, if you will, of having a 3-month time limit every 3 years to access the benefits while they look for work or while they get their paperwork together. But instead, Ohioans, again, in that age range, are subject to work requirements on day one of receiving their SNAP benefits, of being approved for the SNAP benefits. So, you know, we've talked a lot on this show about older adults and the challenges and struggles that they have with food insecurity, being able to not typically have earned income by definition of being an older adult. And so we are really concerned about how, you know, this policy is going to impact the older Ohioans in the state who are typically locked out of, you know, the you know, work system in our state, you know, through issues with, you know, digital literacy, disabilities, other reasons. So I'm really concerned about those debt ceiling changes that just recently went into effect. We know that they were passed in late May, early June, but, you know, the federal fiscal year, which was began on October 1st, is when things really started kicking off. And another thing in the debt ceiling was, in addition to raising the age of ABOD employment, we also saw some new exemptions for ABOD employment, which was really nice to see. And those three exemptions include an exemption for homelessness, an exemption for veterans, and an exemption for former foster youth.
Thanks, Hope. I really appreciate those updates. Maybe someone will have, you know, an exemption that applies to them. So I encourage everyone to definitely go check those out, because as Hope said, you know, it was reevaluated in the beginning of October. So thank you both for the recap on PHE, the debt ceiling, work requirements, all of the things that are going on. Sarah, you are advocacy and engagement manager here at OAF. And as you know, we, you know, we're discussing these things that have been going on, but what's currently looming or a pressing matter is a very closely approaching and yet again the threat of a government shutdown on November 17th. So that is when the current continuing resolution expires. Can you talk to us about what this means? How did we even get to a continuing resolution to begin with? And where do we go from here, you know, come potential government shutdown on the 17th of November?
Thanks for this question. I know that this is at the top of our minds, and we're doing our best to spread the word about what this may mean for Ohioans, which I know Hope will get into. Hopefully I can be brief, but there's a lot of context here that needs to be said, and background that needs to be talked about. So Congress has to pass an annual budget every year, which authorizes spending for the government and outlines what their priorities are for that year. Sometimes, however, or I should say often, Congress can't pass an annual spending bill by the deadline, which is September 30th, when the current fiscal year ends and the new one begins. So this can be for a multitude of reasons. they have other priorities they must pass, or they have serious disagreements among members or in between the chambers. So usually they pass something called a continuing resolution, or what we call a CR, which basically keeps the status quo for the time being. That gives them some more time to work out differences and pass an annual budget. So that's kind of basically what happened here this year. The House had really significant disagreements among their members on what levels of funding agencies and programs should receive. Some of that disagreement actually came from the debt ceiling deal that happened in June. President Biden and the leaders of both parties kind of came to an agreement that they needed to set certain spending levels, and there's then disagreements on what was said and as part of the deal. So the funding levels the House wanted to pass before September also wouldn't be able to pass in the Senate. So there was disagreements among House members, and then there was also disagreements among the House and the Senate. And unfortunately, the Senate also couldn't really agree among themselves either. So there's a lot of disagreements happening in September when they were working out funding levels. With all of that disagreement and kind of disarray, food banks and other nonprofit organizations were preparing for a government shutdown and, you know, messaging accordingly. I know that we were asking our state agencies, you know, what happens in an event of a shutdown? Do school meals continue? Does SNAP continue to get paid out? All those sorts of things. And there was some real confusion and fear of what a government shutdown would really mean for furloughed federal employees and critical nutrition programs that Ohioans rely on. So really at the 11th hour on September 30th, the House passed the CR with bipartisan support. Mm-hmm. Like Audrey said, the deadline for that CR is November 17th, which we are quickly mm-hmm. approaching. You know, the House passed that CR, the Senate then, you know, it was kicked to the Senate, and then they passed it, and then President Biden signed off on that. As a result of the CR, there was real anger among House members on what that deal meant to, you know, continue to fund the government. And so Speaker McCarthy ended up being ousted from the Speaker's office. Because of that, they've had to elect a Speaker, and there has been significant delays.
21 days.
Significant delays. Thankfully, we do have a Speaker now. His name is Speaker Johnson. So Congress is running out of time to pass an annual spending package as a result of all of these delays and disagreements and disarray. So it is much more likely that they would pass another CR, possibly until the end of the year, so that they can work out some of their differences. They have made commitments, however, to keep the government open. That sounds like it's a priority of the new Speaker. So we'll have to see how this all plays out. I know that we as food banks will be preparing either way for a shutdown. We know that more Ohioans will come to our lines in the event of a shutdown as federal workers are furloughed for an uncertain amount of time. Thankfully, there are some assurances that critical nutrition programs will be funded and remain funded, which I know hope we'll go into.
Perfect. Thanks, Sarah. I appreciate you kind of summing all of that up. I feel like there's a lot in this episode, and it's kind of hard to separate one from the other. But I think that you summed it up really well in a way that our viewers can kind of understand a little bit of what we mean when we say chaos. We mean chaos. But we're doing our best, especially here as an association, and trying to lean on each other as colleagues and kind of skills and interest. So that brings me to you, Hope. I know you and Sarah work closely together on a lot of these policies and concerns, you know, with you being our director of nutrition policy and programs. But in addition, you also have a very niche interest and skill set in maternal and infant health, including just phenomenal knowledge on SNAP benefits, WIC benefits. So I'm interested to hear from you with your perspective, what kind of threats do programs like SNAP and WIC possibly face if a government shutdown occurs on the 17th?
Thanks, Audrey. Yeah, WIC and SNAP are thankfully both protected. We have commitments from the USDA on those two fronts about they are fully funded. Applications can be worked and for both programs, and benefits will be paid out for both programs in all states, in all 50 states, territories, etc., through December 31st of 2023, which is really good to hear. I know that's very quick. It's a very quick turnaround. Not a lot of assurances, but enough to get us through the holidays for our most vulnerable. So, but WIC, on the other hand, though, is facing a crisis unrelated, actually, to the government shutdown, but related to more business Congress hasn't gotten done this year, which is the House Agriculture Appropriations Bill, which also kind of sort of gets us into the Child Nutrition Reauthorization, which hasn't happened in 8 years and counting. So WIC is actually a program that is not funded through the Farm Bill, has nothing to do with the Farm Bill, but instead is a block grant. So it's not an entitlement program, it is instead a block grant. So states are allocated a certain amount of money every year. And because WIC has been declining rapidly, in fact, over the past several generations and decades, most states don't actually use all of their WIC money. But because of all of the things that we have spoken about today, with the food insecurity numbers rising, the public health emergency is unwinding, which means a lot of the temporary programs that are most vulnerable have grown to rely on, like, you know, having health insurance and having food and having enough food and adequate amount of benefits to purchase food. A lot of that has gone away with the public health emergency unwind. So a lot of families, especially families with young children, are turning back to WIC, some for the first time, some because they just need resources and they need more tools in their toolboxes to feed their families and meet their basic needs. So WIC actually is facing unprecedented levels of rising enrollment, which is good that we have a program that's there to respond to that. But because of the way that WIC is structured, in case you all listeners are not familiar, unlike the SNAP program, which allocates a certain amount of funds to families or a beneficiary per month, WIC allocates a package of foods per month. So the cost of that package can vary with, you know, food inflation rises, it falls, but, you know, a beneficiary is guaranteed whatever is in their package. So with rising participation paired with very high food inflation, the WIC program has spent a lot more money than was predicted. Right now, WIC has been reauthorized every year on a bipartisan basis to make sure that that money gets out to states. But right now, you know, it's at its max. It's facing a huge, massive government funding shortfall. And so we need the House Agriculture Appropriations Committee to get together to fully fund WIC by December 31st of 2023. Otherwise, in 2024, states, including Ohio, all states, all territories, will be facing waiting list for our WIC program, which is, again, something we have never seen before in the program, because by definition of the program, it's supposed to serve and help young children develop in a science-based diet. And so we have never had to turn people away. There's never been a line, although it's not an entitlement program. It has always kind of been treated as such. And so we are really, really afraid if the House Appropriations Committee cannot come to an agreement and come to an agreement that fully funds WIC, that accounts for the rising enrollment and that accounts for the rising food inflation, that still allocates enough money for all mothers, pregnant people, parenting people, and their children under five to access the program.
Great. Thank you so much for kind of breaking down WIC, and when you were discussing WIC, you know, you hit briefly on the Farm Bill, and things like SNAP, I know, are under threat when we discuss the Farm Bill. So it's ironic that, you know, we're talking about this approaching potential government shutdown. It's just possibly just days, weeks away, and it's in the forefront for many because of this. But as you briefly hit on, we do have a currently expired Farm Bill, and we haven't lost sight of that at all. So again, thank you for elaborating on WIC, but could you now kind of talk to us a little bit about any potential threats programs like SNAP or other funding may be seeing if we cannot pass a strong Farm Bill? Hope, actually, I was wondering, before you dive specifically into that, could you maybe just rewind a bit for our listeners and briefly take us through how we even ended up with an expired Farm Bill and what that means for these assistant programs?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Audrey. So the Farm Bill is supposed to be reauthorized every 5 years in the same way that child nutrition is also supposed to be reauthorized every 5 years, but it hasn't since 2015. And so we're still waiting on that, 8 years and counting. But the Farm Bill is supposed to be reauthorized every 5 years. But for the reasons, honestly, that my colleague Sarah outlined, we just haven't pulled it together this year. Increased polarization, tight margins in Congress, a divided legislative branch, et cetera, has resulted in, you know, the expiration of a Farm Bill. And so, you know, we are very much paying attention to the Farm Bill as food bankers who rely on TFAP, who rely on the nutrition title being strong, and we need either a new Farm Bill or a continuing resolution, which we've talked about a lot today, by December 31st to keep a lot of, you know, our farmers and our people in this country fed. Luckily, though, SNAP is not reliant on the passage of a Farm Bill to keep going. So most SNAP beneficiaries, from the way we understand it, will be okay, regardless of whether a CR or a continuing Farm Bill is passed. However, a lot of our Farm Bill priorities will not be addressed in a continuing resolution, should that be the route. So we've talked a lot about our Farm Bill priorities on this podcast this year, but just to reiterate a few of them, we are looking for an end on the prohibition of hot meals. So most SNAP beneficiaries cannot purchase hot meals with their SNAP card. Most college students are locked out of the SNAP program. Increased TFAP funding and other policies related to SNAP in the nutrition title. You know, there's no chance, no hope at any changes of that unless we get an actual real Farm Bill and not a continuing resolution. So, you know, we're watching it closely, we're monitoring it closely, but, you know, honestly, for the reasons that we don't have a federal budget and the reason that, you know, it took so long for us to get a speaker and it took so long for us to get, you know, a continuing resolution to begin with is the same reason that we don't have a Farm Bill.
Yeah, and I think it just goes with the theme of this episode, which is chaos. That's what I've determined this theme is chaos. So I just want to say thanks to you, Hope, for in the middle of all the chaos, being true to yourself and the things that are important to you, like the programs with SNAP and WIC, and again, your expertise in those. So I really appreciate your perspective on it. Sarah, you've been in the trenches advocating for Ohioans regarding the Farm Bill. You know, advocacy is kind of your niche and expertise, and as our advocacy and engagement manager, you're constantly keeping up with the news, you're engaged with our committee members' offices, you're working with our member food bank advocates, and even occasionally making in-person visits and meetings. I know I've had the privilege of sitting in some of those meetings with you, and I have certainly heard it, but I'm wondering if for our listeners, if you could give us your elevator pitch for why a strong Farm Bill is so crucial.
Of course, yeah. Is it supposed to be 30 seconds? Or?
It could be longer than that, but let's see what we can do.
Well, I'll just say that every 5 years, Congress, with the help of farmers and producers, nutrition advocates, and other stakeholders, comes together to put together a very vast, complex bill that addresses the current needs of those constituencies, while also trying to be really forward-looking and addressing what may be coming down the pike. It's when, like Hope said, it's really when real substantial policy changes and funding increases are happening. A strong, food secure Farm Bill is critical to make sure that Ohio's impacted, which is really all of us, But especially food insecure Ohioans have policies that really reflect their reality and make their lives a little bit better and easier, which in my opinion is the goal of government. So there's my pitch.
Thanks, I appreciate it. I think that was 30 seconds. You were quick, you were good.
Wait, do I get 30 seconds too?
Yeah, please, ready, go.
So honestly, like Sarah, my colleague Sarah has outlined, you know, the food insecurity numbers from 2022 that were just recently released by USDA earlier this week. And she went over those earlier in this podcast, and you know, those numbers are incredibly high. Like I think the highest since the Great Recession in the late 2000s.
Yeah.
2000s.
Mm-hmm, that's correct.
And so those numbers don't even reflect the end of the temporary programming, the public health emergency programming that you also talked about earlier mm-hmm. in this podcast. So we know that, like you said, the end of SNAP emergency allotments was in February. The last payment went out mm-hmm. in February. And, you know, this data that you just, you know, spoke through ended in December of 2022. Mm-hmm. So those numbers were incredibly high and don't even reflect the fact that, you know, most beneficiaries lost hundreds, most families, vulnerable families lost hundreds of dollars and may or may not have been kicked off of Medicaid in the process. So, you know, we need a food secure farm bill, not just a strong farm bill, not just a farm bill. We need a food secure farm bill with a strong nutrition title. And, you know, we need increases to TFAP. And we also know that climate change is real. And so we know that our agriculture, our agricultural partners, our farmers, our producers, our distributors, they need help mm-hmm. Addressing, you know, the major, major, major weather changes and patterns, the storms, the shifting. It's all very real. And we need something, and we need something very quickly mm-hmm. To address, you know, the numbers, the data. The data is there. It's real. We need it. And I know that was more than 30 seconds, so sorry. But I just wanted to add that.
Well, you heard our 2-minute total pitch from Sarah and Hope, and I think they said it very well. Hope, I appreciate you bringing that perspective, because it goes to show that even though it's currently expired, even if it passes tomorrow, it cannot be a matter of just passing it. There's so much more that goes into it for the security of our neighbors and us as Ohioans. So I really appreciate your perspective on that. You know, as we're talking about gratitude, I just want to take a moment and express my gratitude to both of you. It's not easy discussing these complex and sometimes disheartening topics, but your dedication to this important work is truly commendable. I want to thank you both. You know, we said earlier, I think Sarah used the term bleak. We're using words like chaos and disarray and words that aren't necessarily the most hopeful or exciting. But to end on more of a hopeful or positive note, I wanted to hear from just both of you. What are you excited about in coming months? You two are working together and you have some stuff in the pipeline for a great bill you're working towards on hunger-free campuses. Sarah, I know you're advocating for state child tax credits and Hope, of course, we've already discussed your passion with maternal and infant health. So what are you excited about or hopeful towards in your work over the next couple months within the associations and as an Ohioan?
Ooh. Well, OSU will win the national championship, so that's fun.
OH.
IO. Go Bucks. And yeah, so that's exciting. But you know, when it comes to our work, I am really excited about the Hunger Free Campus bill. I'm excited to get that in front of the legislature and allow that to go through the full committee process, because I think that, you know, our members of our legislature on both sides of the aisle are really interested in workforce development right now. Rightfully so. There's a lot of great things coming to Ohio, and we need, you know, the next generation of Ohioans, you know, prepared and ready to work. And so I think that it means, you know, passing policies that, you know, back that up. And so I'm really excited about our hunger-free campus legislation. But I'm also really excited. Our food bank network are all doing some really cool, innovative things. Our partners and friends over at Mid-Ohio, they just opened up yet another Mid-Ohio market on Gantz Road. It's so cool. It's in a former Aldi building. And it's just like a regular grocery store, and I just really appreciate when our food banks have the capacity and interest and, you know, expertise and the ability to allow our neighbors and our the most vulnerable among us to just shop like normal. I just think that that's just so great. And speaking of Mid-Ohio, they also just opened up some food lockers, which is so cool and one of the first of its kind in the country that allows people who work, you know, odd jobs or have other commitments who can't get to a pantry between, you know, 9 and 5, 9 and 4 on a weekday. You know, they get off at 11, you work at a factory, you get off at 2 a.m. How am I going to eat? You know, you come to this locker, it's secure, it's refrigerated. You get a combination and you go on home. So I'm really excited to see what else our food banks come up with and how we can help them. But I think that's it for me. What about you, Sarah?
Yeah, I think all of the bills and policy proposals are really, really exciting. I think a lot of those things are well within reach and can make a real meaningful difference in people's lives. But what I kept on thinking while I was preparing for this was, you know, that I'm the most excited about being in community and training our friends at the food banks to advocate for their organizations and the neighbors they serve. I know that for most listeners, I am just the host of this podcast, but a lot of my work is working with those great folks. So I'm excited to continue to do that. We have a training in the pipeline in early January where we'll be running through the basics and getting more people involved. And that is really what I'm the most excited about. I'm also excited to build on our ongoing commitment to engage people with lived experience. We'll just continue to be doing that wherever we can. So I'm excited for that. You don't need to hear it from me all the time. You should hear it from the folks most impacted. So excited to continue that work.
Wait, don't let her off the hook. What are you excited for, Audrey?
Oh, I'm not prepared. I think I'm just most excited for continuing the work at a larger level. For someone who, you know, again, it's been about a little over 30 days and I'm adjusting from being directly in the service every day to kind of being, you know, at this macro level, which is what I wanted. But just looking forward to adjusting and looking for a more food secure Ohio. For me, it was a food secure Clark County. That's where it started for me because that was home. And I feel really proud of the work that I did there for 3 years, and I'm excited to share it with the other 87 counties in Ohio. So thanks, Hope. I appreciate you asking that. I want to thank you both, not only for your time, but trusting me to host today's episode. You do mostly hear from Sarah, but it was really nice to be able to chat with her and Hope today. To the both of you, the work you're doing is incredibly vital, even when the topics are tough, and I appreciate you giving our listeners a glimpse into that today. So with that, we'll wrap up today's episode. Thanks for joining us, and we'll explore the complexities of Congress and more to come in the next one.
I hope you enjoyed our episode breaking down the latest updates from Congress that impact Ohioans with low incomes and the organizations and programs that support them. We'll be sure to link all of our sources in the show notes for additional reading. Be sure to check that out. Thanks again to Audrey for hosting us and Hope for joining me as always to share the latest news. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.